Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this here program. We thank you for listening to AFR. Joining me to co-host today are Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
All right, so we put Fred back on Venus. So we decided to do a little bit more social distancing around here because COVID is spreading across the country.
And in our state, in our section of the state, it's spreading.
Yeah. Yeah, we're hearing more and more folks who have. Fred, you know anybody who has it?
Do not. Rather strange, but I do not.
I don't either. But hey, I know someone who does.
Well, I just know someone. I do know a few folks who have it, but I do know in our morning devotion that we have here, devotions that we have here for our staff, there's been more and more mention of people who know somebody or family members,
right,
and that kind of thing. So I do know it's out there and it's spreading. That is COVID-19. Will the next one be COVID-20? I mean, is that how we number these things? Pandemics?
You know, I don't think anybody knows anything about what's coming or what's what or mask, no mask. Nobody, no,
it's like Star Wars 7. So 5 years from now, we'd be talking about COVID-24.
COVID-24.
I don't know if people are going, Tim, it's not funny. I know it's not funny, but
it's not funny if you get the disease, but we're just trying to keep
perspective.
Yeah.
Some perspective.
You see, now if somebody gives me that and they say, COVID-19 is not funny, you shouldn't joke around, I'm going to say, well, you're not supposed to be afraid either. That's a sin. Mm. So, if
great,
you want,
great guilt trip back at them.
That's right. You guilt trip me.
I guilt trip you
right back.
How you like them apples? All right. So, Ed, if folks want to engage, watch, participate, access the information we're talking about here themselves, how can they do that?
Well, they can search. They can go on either Facebook or YouTube and search for Today's Issues. Click through, and Facebook is the one platform where we do post. Brent Creeley, our producer, posts the stories that we cover. So why do we do that? If you want to read in more depth and explore,
if you don't
the
believe
issue,
us, you want to read it for yourself.
That's right.
Here you go.
You just go to Facebook, but you can watch us on both Facebook and YouTube.
All right.
Now they won't be able to see Fred, though, right? No, they can't see Fred.
Fred's in Studio Venus.
We can see
to it.
I'm cloaked.
And so we've distanced Brother Fred.
Fred's cloaked on Venus.
Cloaked on Venus. You know, that's kind of, you're getting into science fiction area there, Fred. You don't strike me as a sci-fi.
No, I'm in a household, though, that sci-fi rules.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm surrounded.
You got sci-fi fans in the fam?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Okay. Big time.
Well, have they ever read my novel?
Have they read your novel?
I wrote a science fiction novel.
You did.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah. This is. This is why it's not a bestseller, because people like it. Tim, I gave Tim a copy
and I haven't
3 years
it,
ago. And every time he goes to the beach, he says, yeah, I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
It's, by the way, folks, it's called Fallen Race.
As an author, not science fiction, granted. But I will let you promo your book in just a minute.
Yeah.
I wrote a couple of short story humor books back in the late 90s. But I could always tell the people ready and they, look, going to read your book. You're going to get to it. Sure. So anyway, I could tell they were just, you know, patronizing me. But, you did write a...
I wrote a novel. And this is unintentional. I didn't plan to...
I know, but how do...
to promote this. You go to afastore.net and you search for Fallen Race. And by the way, there is a cool little trailer.
Fallen Race is the title of it.
Fallen Race is the title. I am working on the sequel. That should be done by the end of this year.
Unless COVID-20 hits.
Unless COVID-20 hits. There's a cool little trailer that American Family Studios produced for it, and it's pretty well done. So this is a kind of a pre-evangelism book. That's the way I wrote it for like my son's age when he was in high school and college. But it's I've heard very good things about it. And once a quarter, I get a royalty check from AFA, usually in the $2 or $3 range.
So,
that's the truth.
So look out, McDonald's. Here, look out, McDonald's. Here it comes.
That's right. Right? That's right. So go buy it. Folks, go buy a copy, huh?
Hey.
Get me up to a $15.
Show Ed some
royalty.
Love and read that's it before right. I do. Mm. Okay? I am going to read it, by the way, but I know you've heard
blah,
that before.
Blah, 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 blah.
So go to afastore.net, afastore.net. Ed's novel is called Fallen, F-A-L-L-E-N. Race. And so check that out. All right, Fred.
All right, here we go. If the goal of the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee yesterday was to prove to the American public they are amongst the most despicable, rude politicians in the United States, they succeeded. They got an A.
Mm-hmm.
To prove the point, here is a short excerpt. Now, yesterday, the Attorney General of the United States, William Barr, was invited to go to the House Judiciary Committee. They have these hearings. This is kind of normal practice. And the way it's supposed to work is that members of the committee ask questions of the Attorney General. And normally when you ask somebody a question, you allow them to respond. But here is how it sounded yesterday as the Democrats went on their tirade against the Attorney General. Cut number one.
They only got 2 minutes, sir.
That they recognized.
Mr. Barr, if I
may. Yeah, but this is a hearing. I thought I was the one that was supposed to be heard.
No,
I gave instructions as to what the...
Reclaiming my time.
Yeah, I'm answering your question.
Well, you got to let him answer.
Reclaiming my time.
We were not taking down public health orders. We were making narrow...
The gentleman's time is expired.
We were calling attention to the fact...
Will you restore my time because this witness is speaking over my time?
You went over time. Let the witness respond.
Mr. Barr, I just asked for a yes or no. So let me just tell you, I'm starting to lose my temper.
I am aware of protesters in the federal government.
Excuse me, Mr. Barr, this is my time and I control it.
I'll get to that, Mr. Barr.
I mean, does it have to do with quibbling over...
Mr. Barr, I will get to that. Claiming my time, you answered the question.
Okay.
I have another question for you. On June 19th of 2020.
Actually, I need to answer that question.
Mr. Attorney General, you did answer the question.
No, you said under penalty of perjury. I'm going to answer the question.
You know, he kept his cool, and I'm absolutely amazed.
Well, I watched a lot of it, and it was what you just heard was a fair characterization of how it went. The Democrats would ask a question. Not all of them, but a lot of them was just like you heard it. They would make a statement in the form of a question or a setup question, which probably had it needed an explanation. And sometimes you had to set the background for it. They wouldn't let him do anything like that. One sentence would come out of William Barr's William Barr, the Attorney General's mouth. And the Democrats would absolutely interrupt him and say and use the expression. They kept using the expression, "I reclaim my time." That's what they said over and over again before he even honestly had a chance. If the Republicans had done this to a Democrat Attorney General, I would have been just as upset.
Right.
Because nothing was accomplished by that other than the Democrats making a spectacle of themselves, I guess to please their constituency. They would have crucified him. Some of them would have had they been. They were like ravenous dogs, wild dogs out there. So it didn't. I'm surprised that Attorney General Barr continued to sit through that. And in fact, do you have the 5-minute request for a break clip?
I do not have that.
All right. You got it? All right. There's Chairman Nadler, Jerry Nadler from New York, the Democrat, he delayed the hearing 45 minutes, I think, because he was involved in a minor car accident on the way to the hearing. He was unhurt, but it delayed the beginning of the hearing, the House Judiciary Committee, and so after a couple hours, I think, into the questioning, Attorney General Barr wanted a 5-minute break. He requested a 5-minute break, and here's what happened.
Ms. Dean is recognized.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, could we take a 5-minute break?
Ms. Dean is recognized.
Could we take a 5-minute break, Mr. Chairman?
No.
That's a common courtesy, Ms. Dean is Chairman, recognized. Of every witness.
I waited 45, an hour for you this morning. I haven't had lunch. I'd like to take a five-minute break.
Mr. Attorney General, we are almost finished. We're going to be finished in a few minutes. We can certainly take a break, but
you're real class. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
After this, if you still want, we'll have a break.
No, he wants a break now.
You want it now?
And you just mentioned rudeness. I think we're seeing it on display. Let's let the Attorney General have a break.
Committee will stand in recess now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The other voice there was Jim Jordan, the ranking Republican member on that committee. Chairman Nadler did yield finally for a 5-minute break. Or requested by the Attorney General. But that just shows you the tone.
Well, Jerry Nadler, Congressman Nadler, is really such a nice person. When when I heard that the hearing was going to be delayed because there was an accident, my first thought was he probably ran over puppies and then backed up and did it again. Because when I say he's a nice person, he's not. Mm-mm. He's not a nice person. And listen, I know that Congress has contention within it, within its halls, so on and so forth. You have two political parties that don't agree over the decades that I've been following politics. But this is just a pettiness and meanness that I just don't ever remember. I've watched plenty of hearings over the years, even when they were after Richard Nixon. They maintained the kind of decorum that you expect from Congress. But this is off the charts.
Listen, there are times when I understand a congressman feels the need to interrupt the witness because the witness is stalling.
Right.
Or the witness is trying to run out the clock so he or she really doesn't have to answer a question. And those congressmen are limited themselves to... That's why they wanted to reclaim their time. They kept saying, I think they're limited by 5 minutes or something like that.
Right.
So it's, I understand. But when you ask a question of the Attorney General of the United States and he's there to answer your questions, and you don't let him get through two sentences before you've already, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And these aren't, they tried to frame them as yes or no questions. As we know, a lot of questions dealing with the legal complexities of the job of the Attorney General are not yes and no. On June 19th, did you say to Bill Wilson at the lunchroom, did you say to him this? No. I reclaim my time. You liar, Barr.
I said yes or no.
I'd set you on fire right now if I could. That's basically what they were. They were breathing fire towards him. So I don't think this helped the Democrats at all to any neutral observer. It did help them with their base because their base, they want to destroy Barr and certainly his boss or his superior in the government. Would you call him? He's really not his boss.
No.
The president's not the attorney general's boss. I would just say, in a sense, he is, because he does serve in a cabinet position, but the attorney general's office is independent, supposed to be at least, of whoever the president is politically.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's what they accused Barr of, kept accusing. The bottom line yesterday in all this, Fred and Ed, to me, was the Democrats wanted to blame the president and the attorney general on the mayhem, the mayhem that they deny is going on.
That's right.
Yes.
Right? They wanted to blame him and them for provoking it.
Yeah. To that point, Tim, we know that Gerald Nadler, before yesterday's hearing, said that the talk of Antifa being part of these terrorist activities in places like Seattle and Portland, it's just a myth. We all remember that little audio piece from the last few days. Well, finally, yesterday, Attorney General Barr, in a question from a Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, he laid out what's really happening in Portland, Oregon. Cut number five.
Federal courts are under attack. Since when is it okay to try to burn down a federal court? If someone went down the street to the Prettyman Court here, that beautiful courthouse we have right at the bottom of the hill, and started breaking windows and firing industrial-grade fireworks in to start a fire, throw kerosene balloons in and start fires in the court, is that okay? Is that okay now? No, the U.S. Marshals have a duty to stop that and defend the courthouse, and that's what we are doing in Portland. We are at the courthouse defending the courthouse. We're not out looking for trouble.
And there you have it. I mean, that was the only time he was really allowed to speak yesterday, is when a Republican on the committee had an opportunity, got their 5 minutes. They actually allowed William Barr to speak.
Listen, you got mayhem and violence and rioting going on in a lot of major cities around the country right now, and have had for a few weeks, especially Portland and Seattle, Chicago, I said to a certain extent New York and Atlanta, and in other places, Richmond, Virginia, has had terrible violence and vandalism and mayhem. In fact, the newspaper there, I saw, it's on the front page of Fox News, the newspaper there, the Richmond newspaper, is, I'm assuming they're probably liberal.
Yeah.
But they're calling...
It's a college town, so...
They're saying, it's a capital city.
Yeah.
They're saying enough is enough. Of what this, in other words, there's no leadership, cracking down on this. And that's what's going, I think the Democrats don't want to criticize the mayhem, right? Mm-hmm. And the violence and the destruction and the vandalism and the defacing and the attacks of cops, because they choose those people over the law enforcement authorities, because the law enforcement authorities are the oppressors of these people, right?
Right.
So that's what's going. That's why the mayors.
In other words, that's their story.
That's their story. That's what they tried to frame it yesterday, right, against William Barr, and they're hoping that plays well, I guess, with the voters out there across the country. But I don't think so. I think more people. When we get to election day, I saw yesterday that the polls, if you believe them, are narrowing in Minnesota,
right,
which is a Democrat stronghold. But I think that one poll showed that President Trump had closed to within 3 points. Again, if you believe the polls, this is just an observation. And my point is that I think the more this kind of violence and mayhem and lawlessness, anarchy, goes on, if it continues on through the summer into the fall, that it will help President Trump's election prospects, because let's face it, one of the top priorities for anybody, be they Democrat or Republican, I'm talking about the average citizen out there living in America or independent, is personal safety. If you had to, and protection of property, and if you had to rank priorities of people, certainly the economy would be right there at the top.
Right.
I'm talking about for the average American out there, personal safety and protection of property would rank way up there at the top. Top one or two or three. And if the Democrats are perceived as people who are protecting the ones who are doing the destruction, and it basically sounds like they want to overthrow the government, then that's going to benefit a law and order president, which is Donald Trump.
President Trump, and especially after the conventions, whatever form those take, when the Trump campaign starts unleashing ads, the Trump campaign and the folks he's got around them are very politically savvy. You're going to start to see a lot of ads that tie this kind of violence and mayhem and anarchy and the calls basically to overthrow the Constitution and the foundational principles of our country. All of that is going to be tied to Democrats in general and to Joe Biden in particular. And I think that that kind of thing is really going to start to move the needle for President Trump. Right now, people are probably willing to say, I don't want the violence coming to my neighborhood, but it's not a voting issue for me. I'm voting on X, Y, and Z. Right. But after those conventions, when those ads start coming and clarify the danger that these inner cities and our country is in, I think that's going to start to move.
You know, Fred and Ed, I've been watching some of the news reports that I don't think those of us who don't live in these cities don't understand the destruction that has been done, because we don't see it every day or don't experience it. Or you know what I'm saying? I was watching Ainsley Earhart. Is that her name?
Ainsley Earhart. Yeah.
And she was describing, and then I saw a New York Post article, the destruction that was done in New York City in those couple of weeks, and in some regards, still going on. Streets in Minneapolis, in Portland, in Seattle, and other places, in Los Angeles, streets that are major stores that are still boarded up.
Yeah.
Graffiti everywhere. You know what I'm saying? It's just
well, it starts to look like
third world
Iraq or someplace like that, where you have all those kinds of scenes of devastation.
Yeah, and by the way, those federal agents out in Portland, as William Barr said, the Attorney General, they are only protecting the federal courthouse.
That's all.
Yes.
Okay, they're protecting. That's federal property. That's where the judicial system, you know, our judicial system. The rioters want to burn it to the ground.
Can you imagine if I don't know what kind of backup they have for like a federal courthouse, but can you imagine if they were able to burn it down, the kinds of records that would be lost, where, you know, computers destroyed? Maybe they do. I'm sure they probably back it up off site, but in terms of prosecuting crimes or any of those kinds of things.
They also, the Portland city officials, are not guaranteeing the protection of the property.
Right. No.
So the local police there are not either told to stand down or they're incapable of dealing with these rioters who have cocktails and other things, other weapons. They're coming at them night after night. It's like 60 days in a row.
Yeah.
And so the president and the federal government has no choice but to send in their own law enforcement to protect the building.
Right.
And so when you protect the building, you by necessity get in confrontation with these anarchists.
Who are provoking confrontations.
Oh, yeah, they're throwing things at the cops, at the federal agents. So when you get in a confrontation and then somebody whips out a video camera.
Yeah.
Right, or a cell phone. Look at this brute in military-style outfit, you know, putting this person on the ground.
Right.
You know, this is the oppression that is
dictatorship. Barred.
This is the dictatorship. This is Nancy Pelosi called them stormtroopers.
Right.
I think Jerry Nadler did too. Well, Ed, what is a stormtrooper?
Well, the word is used to designate Nazi hooligans like the black shirts, for example. And stormtroopers later came to represent the military. But it's connected to Nazism. That's why they're calling them stormtroopers.
So the mayor in Portland and also Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic Party, are referring to our federal agents protecting the building in Portland as stormtroopers. Mm-hmm. They're aggressive. They're going out seeking people they can...
And they're Nazis. In. They're the Nazi military for a despot president, a dictator.
Right. That's the way the Democrats want to frame this. That was the whole point of that, quote, hearing yesterday. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek.
There's a fundamental error in worldviews that suggests human nature is inherently good, that it's not evil. Only Christianity gets human nature right.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, my dad was a Methodist pastor, and he also led tours to Israel. He did that twice a year, and he started doing that in 1968. So all during the 80s and the 90s, I learned from him. And so now today, I'm passing the torch on to my sons, Wesley and Walker, as they help me lead folks to Israel each March. We're doing so in March of 2021. We'd love for you to come along with us. If you've always wanted to see Israel, maybe our trip is for you. Check out all the information at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. It's going to be a great time seeing the land of the Bible with fellow Christians in March of 2021. twholyland.com is the website.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Several years ago, I wrote a series of stories exposing Common Core. One set of lessons actually portrayed our founding fathers as domestic terrorists. The point, as I explained in the column, was to convince a generation of Americans that the men who fought for our freedom were evil men, and therefore America was evil. A few days ago at the University of Florida, a campus reform reporter interviewed students about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. The question was straightforward. Do you think the founding fathers were more villains or heroes? The overwhelming answer, villains. One student told Campus Reform our founding fathers were racist because they owned slaves and therefore the foundation of our very country was flawed. It's no laughing matter, folks. Our nation's public education system has been weaponized, and they're filling our kids' minds with anti-American propaganda. Be sure to listen to my national radio show, noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome us back, Ed.
Well, welcome back to Today's Issues. Tim Wildman and Ed Vitagliano are your hosts.
We got another dude over there.
Oh yeah, Fred Jackson, who's over in Studio Venus. Just out of sight, out of mind. But now I can see him on the little iPad here. Our resident Canadian.
I've been uncloaked.
Uncloaked. That's just funny to me that you even know what that means, because that's like goes back to Star Trek.
I don't know. I watch Star Trek and Star Wars. I don't know what that means. Uncloaked. What are you talking about?
Cloaked is when you let the Klingons. You know who the Klingons
were?
Yeah,
Klingons,
one of the adversaries of the human race. Their ships would cloak, go invisible. And then when they wanted to fire on the Enterprise, they'd have to uncloak, fire, and then cloak again. So some of the folks who are listening to us know exactly what I'm talking about. And
Fred's uncloaked then.
Yes. So in other words, he's no longer invisible.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that explanation there.
Absolutely.
Well, I asked for it.
You did. I mean, a little sigh. I'm just dropping knowledge on you, Tim, when it comes to Klingons. And I can't actually speak Klingon. Do you know there's actually a language,
yes,
that Klingon, that people learn. Real Star Trek fans will learn how to speak in Klingon.
Actually, that was a feature in a Fraser episode back a few years ago.
Yes.
He was speaking at his son's bar mitzvah.
Yes, that that was.
And someone told him it was Hebrew,
yes.
And he started speaking.
Because it is kind of a guttural, Klingon is kind of a guttural language. I don't know whether our listeners are proud of me or embarrassed for me that I know all this. I don't know.
The one language that I think would be the hardest on your mouth would be German.
Yeah.
Huh?
Because it is kind of...
I mean, you got to whip that tongue around, man. Huh? Am I right?
And not in a pretty way like Spanish or something like that, where you get the soft, you know, the tortilla, you know, or those kind of things. It's nothing soft.
It doesn't flow. It's like heavy metal. it's like if you speak heavy metal, it would be German.
The heavy metal of the languages.
Huh?
That's...
Or grunge.
That is brilliant. Yeah, heavy metal...
I know some German.
You know some German?
Or give me a couple. Give me a phrase, Fred. Lay it on me.
Wiener Schnitzel.
Wiener Schnitzel.
Did you just say hot dog? What did you say?
Der Wiener Schnitzel.
Wiener Schnitzel.
Well, I used to use
what does
this
that mean?
Joke with my mom, who is Greek. She's in heaven now and has been for decades. But people would say, you know any other languages? I know a little Greek. It's my mother. She's 5'1".
That works. Funny. I like that. She's 5'1", a little Greek.
Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. What's that language thing
Klingon?
You buy off TV? No.
The Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone. Yeah. Did you ever try that?
No, man. I don't want.
You weren't interested.
I don't have enough time left in my life to learn a new language. Maybe 20 years ago, I could have.
After you went through speaking teenage.
Yes, that's right.
We all go through speaking the teenage years.
I'm just now learning emoji.
Okay.
So.
All right. All right. Abraham Hamilton III is with us, whether he wants to be or not. He's stuck in the middle between Ed. Ed, the Klingon expert, and Tim. Good morning, Brother
Good morning.
Abe.
Good morning.
Hey, you brought a beautiful young lady with you to work this morning.
Yeah, it is my oldest daughter who's in studio with us now.
You can't see her on camera right now, but she's over there with us. So so what grade are you in, sweetheart? I know you're homeschooled, but... What'd she say?
She said third grade.
Third grade.
That's always a precarious question for homeschoolers. Because subjects,
but
she's in third.
In homeschooling, do you have it grade advancements? Or do you
You do, but it's more content-based. Usually the grade discussions are to make other people more comfortable.
Gotcha. Okay. No, go ahead. You got more Klingon stuff?
No, I do want one of our Facebook viewers.
Yeah.
Also, were you asking before the break about stormtroopers?
I was.
And I had tied it only to the Nazis, but I did forget, and Alan reminded me here on Facebook, that stormtroopers are also what they called the clad in white soldiers who served Darth Vader on Star Wars.
I remember they called them stormtroopers.
They were called stormtroopers, too. So thank you, Alan, for getting me back to science fiction where we all belong.
All right, Abe. The continuing confrontation between churches and the state as it relates to COVID-19 regulations. The well-known pastor John MacArthur in California, he is, I think Dr. MacArthur's 80 or something like that.
He's very, very close to that.
But what did he decide about Governor? What did Governor Newsom say to the churches of California, and what was John MacArthur's response?
Yeah, Governor Newsom ordered that churches in at least 32 Californian counties, along with restaurants, bars, fitness centers, hair salons, and barbershops, that they would be closed indefinitely. Closed indefinitely as a result of the coronavirus.
And there's 58 counties total, so this is more than half.
Yes, and now, again, that's in at least, so it can exceed 32.
Now, didn't he allow for outside meetings?
Yes.
Okay,
for indoor meetings.
Down indoor meetings.
Yes.
And did he actually say, or did his order imply that church services are non-essential?
The order implied it, but by declaring that the churches needed to be shut down indefinitely, you're basically saying churches are non-essential.
Yes.
That's what you're saying. If you can, you don't see anybody saying we're going to shut down Walmart indefinitely.
Right.
So he's literally saying the churches are non-essential for indoor gathering purposes.
Okay. Now, as I understand it, I've been following this fairly closely. Dr. MacArthur's church has complied with all the state's request.
Until now.
Since March. Trying to be a good neighbor. Follow Romans 13. And Dr. MacArthur's taught that you obey the government. Been some controversy about his position on this. But that you obey the civil authorities absolutely until they tell you to sin. And when they tell you you have to sin, then you must resist. That's what his teaching is on this, and that a lot of Christians subscribe to that. We want to be law and order people. We want to respect the authority that is above us civilly, our civil authorities. He's now at loggerheads.
Yeah,
is Dr. MacArthur with Gavin Newsom? Go ahead.
Yeah, he wrote. Well, and he and the elders of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California, after the edict was issued, he wrote on his website, the first thing that he said was that, quote, the biblical order is clear. Christ is Lord over Caesar, not vice versa. Christ, not Caesar, is the head of the church. Then he went on to say, therefore, in response to the recent state order requiring churches in California to limit or suspend all meetings indefinitely, we, the pastors and elders of Grace Community Church, respectfully inform our civic leaders that they have exceeded their legitimate jurisdiction, and faithfulness to Christ prohibits us from observing the restrictions they want to impose on our corporate worship services, end quote.
Now, Fred, do we have he was on Tucker Carlson last night. Do we have any
we do not
sound
at this
from
point.
That? Okay.
Who was I on did, Tucker Carlson?
Tucker, John MacArthur, Pastor okay. MacArthur. Mm-hmm. And it was very good. It was just about a 2.5-minute exchange. But he's got a lot. John MacArthur's got a lot of fans. His teaching is national, international, even though his church is based in California. Mm-hmm. So how impactful do you think his stand will
be? Is he right first?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, he first of all, he's right. I've said long before, any emergency orders, they must be time limited. You cannot announce an indefinite suspension of the First Amendment. As Attorney General William Barr said, that there is no COVID-19 exception to the First Amendment in the Constitution. There is not. So you cannot pronounce an indefinite suspension of First Amendment rights. Period. End of conversation.
So Dr. There. MacArthur is right to resist this.
Yes, he's right legally to resist
and
this.
And his church.
And I would argue he's also right theologically to resist this. And I know there are pastors all across the country of smaller churches who do not have the influence of Dr. MacArthur. But him stepping up to do this is going to have a reverberating effect across the United States of America.
So Fred, do you think Dr. MacArthur has thrown down the gauntlet here? Has he said, come arrest me, Gavin Newsom?
Well, I think he has thrown down the gauntlet. I agree with Abe that we have reached a point. I think, a lot of churches initially believed that they could make some adjustments according to local ordinances and try to be good citizens. But this thing is going on and on. And when you start to, for instance, I go back to the Nevada case, Supreme Court ruling on the Nevada church case just a few days ago, where, in Nevada, go ahead, 50% capacity for the local slot machine outfits.
Yeah, casinos.
Casinos, that's okay. But we're going to hold the numbers allowed in a church building to 50.
Yes.
Now, if that's not a outright persecution of churches, all right? Casinos, 50%. Churches, only 50 people.
Regardless of your capacity.
Regardless of your capacity. So you got a 10,000-member-seat church. You're only allowed 50 people in there.
Yeah.
Put you a couple slot machines or blackjack well, tables in the, you know, in the foyer and roll.
I think we're probably all of us are in agreement theologically, yeah. But also according to the First Amendment, because what other First Amendment rights are people willing to surrender in this quote unquote emergency? In fact, we have had leftists across the country defend large gatherings of protesters because there's a First Amendment right to peaceably assemble, whether it's peaceable or not. I think we have seen the videos. But you had people saying, no, go ahead. Tens of thousands of people can get in the streets.
The mayors and governors are even showing up to march with them.
To march with them, yes. And to encourage it. And that's a part of the hypocrisy that Pastor MacArthur is highlighting, as well as, I would argue, the legal inconsistencies that are present. The large gatherings are allowed if you have the right purpose for gathering in the eyes of the state.
Look, as it relates to this whole issue, too, there's a couple things to differentiate or to consider. One is, when this all started back in March, every Christian wanted to help their neighbor by, in a moment of crisis, of health crisis.
Right.
We wanted to, you know, help each other out.
Flatten the curve.
Help
the hospitals.
Now.
And I think that's an important point to make, Ed, because there's been a moving of the goalposts in this process. We responded initially to the immediate outcry to help us prevent the hospitals from being overrun. So let's flatten the curve.
But let me just say this. I know there are, Abe, you talked about this early on, time limited. You have to be fair. You can't just pick on churches or religious groups. You have to
apply to everybody.
Equally apply to everybody. We see that's not the case now any longer. So if a church chooses to continue to, practice the health recommendations of the CDC or whatever like that, that is up to them.
Right.
That's scripture doesn't talk about that. I don't think that's up to the individual church. However, Abe, what you're saying is, I think we've now crossed the line. Some would say that we had an absolute right to the First Amendment in March.
Yeah.
that is freedom of worship and freedom of religion. Right.
Some churches never did shut down.
Right, and they never did shut down. But most did, for the reasons I just laid out earlier, there's nothing wrong with that. But we can't continue on, is what Dr. MacArthur and I think thousands of churches now are going to just say, look, we can't go, it's going to kill our church.
Right.
I mean, huh? You go a year without some kind of normality, you could lose half your church or more.
Yeah, businesses aren't the only things that can shut down during this time.
And you think about the other consequences that people are dealing with isolation, your domestic violence is on the uptick, just all kinds of other social outflow from having these massive isolations. The church is an essential part of aiding people navigate these torrential times that we face ourselves in, as opposed to saying, you guys can shut down, no need for
you. What do you recommend then? If there are pastors listening to us right now and goes, what should we do? Our elders or deacons of leaders of a church, and they're considering what their next move is.
Yeah.
What should they do?
I've said on the radio, churches need to meet. Now, I'm not saying
that's normal?
Yeah.
Or however they want to?
However they choose to. I think, obviously, I argue that the law protects them in that. And I'm not saying that every church has to do what John MacArthur is doing, but I think churches need to understand that we are essential regardless of what any governor in the country says, because God has made his church essential, and the Lord's bride has to play a critical part in helping our country navigate this torrential time that we find ourselves in.
So you're a constitutional attorney. You've studied this.
And a pastor.
You're saying it's time for churches to go back to normal. Obviously, by normal, we mean go back to having church as you were in March. If you want to have a certain church if the church wants to adopt social distancing or whatever,
sure.
they can, that's up to them.
Yeah.
But don't feel like we should be, Christians should be now stopped by the state from resuming our normal activities.
The entire purpose of the First Amendment stands for the proposition that there's no such thing as a state church in America. I mean, that's bottom line, the First Amendment.
I'm going to wait and see if Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, lets sports teams come back. If he says no cheering.
Yeah.
Because he said no Amazing Grace.
No singing.
Yeah, no singing.
No singing at churches. I just want to see if he tells the Los Angeles Rams fans or San Francisco 49ers fans, listen, you can go to the game, but keep your mouth shut. How would that go at a football game?
Yeah.
Huh? I want to see if he says that. All right, Abe, thanks so much this afternoon.
This afternoon.
To 6 o'clock Central Time.
Yes, sir.
And you'll cover the news of the day.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And also give us some words from the Scripture.
Yes, sir.
Amen.
All right.
All right, that's Abraham Hamilton III. Abe serves as our general counsel here at American Family Association and public policy analyst. All right, you want to welcome our next guest, Ed?
Yeah, I want to welcome John Carpenter, who's pastor of Covenant Reformed Baptist Church in Danville, Virginia. He's also a guest contributor of the Christian Post. Pastor Carpenter, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was enjoying listening to your previous conversation. Some good advice for me.
Amen, brother. Well, hey, tell us about your church there in Danville. Where is Danville if I look at the map of Virginia?
Right east to west, right in the middle, just right on the border with North Carolina. We're actually in, our church building is actually across the border in North Carolina.
So you got a split church, huh?
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
We're on the border.
Although that's the first time I've ever heard churches being split up by states, by state borders. All right, we read a column that you wrote in the Christian Post where you were talking about you were a never-Trumper back during the first election cycle, and you've changed your view. Talk about that whole process.
Yeah, in 2016, from the beginning of the primaries all the way through, I just thought Trump was the wrong one. There was this petition or kind of sign up thing, official sign up on their website, Never Trumper. I signed my name there. I just thought he was, even after he got the nomination, my conclusion was that it would just be better for conservative people just to lose this election, like punting in football, and then wait for the next time, wait for 2020 and wait to get a real conservative candidate. That was my opinion then. And then, and I was pretty staunch in it, and I would spend some time sort of a keyboard warrior debating people online who thought we should support Trump, and I just opposing the idea adamantly, and I just assumed he would lose. What I thought was a good analysis of the election, that he was definitely going to lose. And then, of course, when he won, well, when I'm proven wrong about one thing, that he could possibly win. I just assumed he was going to lose for certain. Even on the very election day, that morning I got up and said, he's definitely going to lose. And so I was just humiliated. And that kind of humbles you a little bit. And you begin to think, well, maybe I'm wrong about other things about him, too. And then particularly as he becomes president, I think a Christian should have a natural respect for the office. We're not revilers. We're not just disrespectful. We can, in a democratic system, we get to have an opinion and we can state that opinion, but you shouldn't be just a insulting and slandering and reviling just because we don't like someone. So, developing somewhat respect for the office, watching what he does. And before the election, I just assumed his stances against abortion, that he wouldn't come through on it. His other conservative promises he made, that it was just, it was just noises to make to get votes, and that he wouldn't do what he said. He was a salesman, and he was trying to sell himself. And I didn't believe he would actually do it. And in fact, it turns out he kept his promises. He's trying to keep his promises as much as he can. And so I've been surprised by that. And then in particular, the judges he's chosen, which I think gets right to the most important issue for Christians right now, which is the matter of life in abortion.
Let me interrupt you just a minute. Now, I gave you a long, long time, more than the Democrats gave Barr yesterday, right there, before I interrupted you. And if you need 2 minutes to take a break, you just raise your hand and I'll grant it. Let me ask the column. It's an excellent column by our guest, Pastor John Carpenter, once a never Trumper. Now he says he's going to vote for the president and endorses him for the November election. Do we have his column posted? Okay, it originally appeared in the Christian Post. We have it at our Today's Issues Facebook page. Pastor, you're not alone by any means in your skepticism of candidate Trump.
Yeah.
I voted for Ted Cruz in the primary, Republican primary. Of course, then Donald Trump went on to win.
I voted for Marco Rubio, by the way.
Marco Rubio. Yeah. You had people who were conservatives proven who were running, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz among them. So, but it was, my guy lost. Your guy lost. Right? And after that was...
I was pulling for Ted Cruz for a little bit. It was Trump and Cruz. And I was hoping for Cruz,
But I remember talking to my good friend Dr. Robert Jeffers of First Baptist Church in Dallas, and Robert was a Trump supporter, and one of the most godly men I know, loves the Bible. And I was going, how are you supporting this guy, man? Third marriage, he was once pro-choice. Now, how do we even know he's pro-life? He says he is.
Yeah, exactly.
And Dr. Jeffers said, look, I know all that, but the guy is pledged to select only pro-life conservative judges from a list provided to him by, and that's one of the most important things. And Dr. Jeffers took the approach. He said he's the only one that can beat Hillary Clinton. Now, in retrospect, I think that's true. Because he was more populist and he was able to draw in people who wouldn't otherwise vote for a Republican necessarily.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So I want to say, now that's when you and I would have parted ways, when I would have said, listen, I can't, and you heard this from your people in your church probably, we got to stop Hillary Clinton. She is coming after Christians. We're a basket of deplorables. It's going to be terrible. The Supreme Court will be lost for 50 years.
Yeah.
And so... How did you handle that when you had that kind of opposition probably within within your church?
Well, we don't do politics in the church, so.
Well, on the sidewalk down the street.
Yeah, on the sidewalk more, or the cyber sidewalk. I just didn't think Trump would do any better, and I.
But if you thought if you thought he was going to lose, it would be a moot point, and then you had to wake up the day after he won and say, "Oh, now what?" Right. Now what?
Yeah.
But anyway, your point is that he President Trump has fulfilled a lot of the promises that he made to Christians.
Sure.
And so are you endorsing his you're endorsing? That's what the column says.
Sure, yeah.
You are.
In 2016, I kind of assumed Hillary Clinton would be much like her husband, immoral in some policies, but sort of moderate. But I just didn't think Trump would do what he said, so I thought we had to put it off 4 years and not lose our witness.
Yeah.
And this time, I think this candidate is actually a danger. This Biden, he looks mild and mannered.
Yeah.
But his actual policy, is pretty leftist.
Oh yeah.
He's the one. We got to go.
My apologies, Pastor John B. Carpenter. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you being on with us.
Sure, thank you for having me.
Okay. He's from the Covenant Reformed Baptist Church in Danville, Virginia. Our thanks to Fred for this hour and Abe, and we'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.